Welcome to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Never before has technology played such a central role in a presidential election, specifically with email. First, exhaustive congressional hearings combed the evidence of misdeeds concerning Hillary Clinton's private email server and came up pretty much empty-handed. Then the Democratic National Committee reported that its emails had been hacked and released by WikiLeaks. We're talking about the big tech stories of 2016 today. Joining us is Dan Rockwell, CEO of Big Kitty Labs. That's a digital technology development firm in Columbus. Welcome back, Dan.
Hey, thanks for having me in.
And by phone, tech journalist reporting for Wired, The Washington Post, and The Intercept, Kim Zetter. Welcome back, Kim.
Thank you.
Kim, the DNC hack was your top pick for tech story of the year. Can you give us a brief rundown of, you know, of the events of how the hack played out and what we know at this point?
Yeah, I should say, though, there were a lot of ties for first, you know, top tech story of the year. At the beginning of the year, we had the Apple FBI case. But, the DNC hack coming at the end of the year really wins out on everything else.
It's kind of like the Academy Awards. The last great movie gets an unfair advantage.
Right, right. So, I mean, so this was, I would say, a long time coming, right? Because I mean, we've had espionage, obviously, for centuries between nation states, and we've had a lot of breaches recently involving dumped documents, right, with the Sony hack,
right.
Ashley Madison, and things like this. So this was inevitable that this this marriage between political hacks and between data breaches and political hacks would be melded so that we would have dumping of documents for political gain. And I think that we're going to see more of this, you know, not just in the U.S., not just between the big players, but between small countries as well who have disputes.
Right. This isn't like Mission Impossible technology. This is not gee whiz stuff we're talking about anymore, right?
Right. And I mean, email spools, if you're going to embarrass someone, that's the thing that you want to go after. You want to go after that server and gather all of that data that's going to be proprietary, that's going to be embarrassing, in some case maybe revealing illegal activity. We've seen it with the Panama Papers leaks, and we'll just see it over and over again.
How do intelligence agencies connect the dots between the hack and the Russian government or the Russian actors employed by the government?
Well, that's that's the big question for the security community, because attribution in using just forensics is almost impossible to do.
Right.
And by forensics, I'm meaning, you know, the little artifacts that are left inside systems that would lead you to, let's see, a phishing attack or how they broke in, things like that. So forensics can actually take you to maybe the computer that launched the attack, but can't attribute motive, intent. And for that, you really need, for definitive attribution, you're going to need some kind of signals intelligence, some kind of old school kind of intelligence, where you're collecting conversations that involve the planning and the direction of an attack.
And like I said earlier, Dan Rockwell, this is not rocket science, the proverbial rocket science that we're talking about here. So what Kim's saying about this is going to become more common, not less common.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of the new wave of everything. If anything, it's going to cause a lot more compliance, a lot of regulation changes. It's going to be a lot. There's going to be a rippling effect from this, along with other sort of bigger trends.
Just about how we treat our emails?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, phishing is a big thing. Everything is sort of a, you know, social engineering. It's all about human targets, trying to figure out how to basically trick the user to open, you know, open the thing or access the port in such a way that you actually expose yourself. And once you're exposed, then the system, you know, whatever these hacks are, they spread across the network in milliseconds. So it's really a kind of a human problem initially. I think, you know, cyber infrastructure has to change across everything. Internet of Things has to change everywhere. So it's kind of scary. But hey, we're ending 2016 on a scary note, and then we on to a brand new year.
Exactly. We got a whole other year to be scared.
Right, right. We have a whole other year to be afraid.
And Kim Zetter, I mean, what Dan said about this is going to ripple down to everyday people. Yeah. You know, I'm already, I mean, constantly sending emails to people saying, is this real?
Yeah, I mean, I think that so we're going to see a lot of companies directing sensitive conversations outside of the email realm. People will be picking up the phone more, probably. So we're going to see that. But I think that when you talk about you mentioned trickling down.
Yeah.
You know, corporations have something to be concerned about when you're involved in you know, mergers and acquisitions and you know, among competitors. Not all competitors are going to play fair, right? And same thing what we saw with the climate change scientists. Remember, their emails were leaked, presumably by someone who didn't agree with the kind of research they were doing. So we're going to see that possibly, you know, in academic realms, in business realms, anytime you've got someone, an activist or someone else who disagrees with what you're doing, you're at the risk of being hacked like this.
It's the irony of this technology, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's convenient, but for both the user and the attacker.
Dan Rockwell, One of your picks for top tech story was Donald Trump's Twitter account.
Yeah. Well, I think
which
that,
I checked today, by the way.
I think Donald Trump validated Twitter as a product that, you know, has an impact. It's really his single most powerful weapon.
And Twitter's been worried.
Yeah. I don't know if, I mean, Twitter's kind of gone through a whole phase where the market can't really figure out, is Twitter worth anything or not? Is it a really viable product? But if you look at Trump, if you took away Twitter from Trump,
yeah,
would he nearly be as effective as he was this year in terms of his general hysteria and media presence online? I mean, he generated a ton of noise and a ton of momentum because of Twitter. So in some ways, I think he's validated that Twitter is a communication. I mean, Twitter was valid before, but you know, here you see you
someone
can actually
won a
track
presidential
it.
Election.
Yeah. In some ways, it's kind of a funny validation of what he's done.
And bypassing the media.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
It's a very
yeah.
effective tool of
Extremely.
Getting your message out directly.
Right.
Apple versus FBI. Kim, another one of your picks was the legal battle between Apple and the FBI. That came up because of that.
San Bernardino.
In San Bernardino with the attack at the government building in San Bernardino during a holiday party.
Yep.
The FBI wanted access, backdoor access to the Apple, the iPhone, and what'd they get?
You mean when they ultimately opened it up?
Yeah.
Well,
not much
yeah.
in terms of anything
yeah.
helpful for the investigation, but I think we all suspected that it was a work phone, and so it's not likely
right.
that the attacker was going to be planning the attack on a work phone. I think that, you know, that case was really significant for a lot of reasons. One, it really raised the awareness among the general public about the issue of security on phones. I think more people are aware of sort of the extent of the steps that Apple has taken to improve security over the last couple of years and the reasons for it and the necessity for it. And, you know, there is the balance that law enforcement needs to conduct investigations, but there are ways to get in. And what we found in that, of course, was that there was another way
right.
to get in.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And there, you know, I wrote a story about a company in Israel called Cellebrite, which is basically the FBI's go-to forensic hackers. Mm. That they devise methods to bypass the passwords and the encryption on mobile phones. They don't get every phone, obviously, but they get enough of them to make you know, it's a really good business for them. So I think that the issue now, though, is we sort of felt like we solved that issue to a certain extent. Intelligence agencies came out saying they don't want backdoors in phones. Efforts by the FBI to pass some legislation that would force a backdoor until now has failed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we don't know what we're facing now with the Trump administration. We don't know if that balance that we feel like we you know, have struck in terms of security and privacy is going to be upended with the Trump administration.
Because he yeah. called for on Apple to yeah. release the backdoor access.
Well, Apple couldn't. They couldn't get into the phone unless they actually altered the operating system on the phone.
Okay.
So the way that this phone is currently constructed, Apple could not get into it. And the FBI was asking them to essentially replace the operating system, the secure operating system, with an insecure one so that they could get in.
Trump supported them. I mean, he did come out on this issue.
Yeah, so I mean, and you know, we've got a lot of, you know, when you're starting to increase the insecurity, which we're feeling now, right, mm-hmm. with the Russia and the assassination yesterday,
right.
and a lot of instability, that creates an environment for lawmakers to give us sort of knee-jerk reactions and want more security without really thinking it through. And we've got a president now, president-elect, who yeah. really kind of supports knee-jerk reactions. So I think everyone is a little concerned what that may mean going yeah. forward for companies and privacy.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit, too, that I always wondered a little bit, too, on that Apple story. It was almost too much noise about it in some ways.
Mm.
And so I think even with Trump going into office, there is going to be a little bit of staging going on. Like if you wanted to change infrastructure on mobile devices, you would need a large event like this to sort of change how things get done.
Huh.
So there's a part of me that can't help but wonder the amount of noise they make around that FBI Apple case. It was almost too loud for what could have happened. Because in the end, 6 months later, you know, someone stepped out of the shadows and like, no problem, we fixed it. Like, bam.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I was like, okay, that was a little too convenient.
For
so 6 months,
yeah.
did we lobby to push a particular agenda, you know, that it was ended up on the books of Congress, and then
yeah.
it goes through, and then are we, you know, we're kind of progressing in this new era where we have to be very careful about what we say on Twitter. We have to be very careful about what we put in our emails. And these are places where we particularly had pretty strong privacy. And now we're realizing that, no, the only thing that's really private is truly in your brain, at least until the wearable comes out and hacks that out of you. But, you know what I mean? So
at least their computer chips.
Right, exactly.
The implants begin. Just real quick, this is something I first learned about from watching you know, a television show, and that's ransomware.
Yeah, ransomware.
This year saw a rise of a particular, that insidious form of computer virus. Kim, ransomware is just what it sounds like. It's someone getting into your system and then making you pay to get your system back.
Right. And, you know, it started out targeting individuals and small businesses
mm-hmm.
and asking for small amounts of money, maybe $100, $300, the equivalent of $100, $300 in Bitcoin. And people were paying it because you figure, well, you know, that's not that much for getting your data back. But it has progressed into sort of this industrial kind of attack now. We saw a spate of attacks against hospitals. You're going to see, focusing on critical infrastructure, people that need access to data for life-saving measures or even to just continue their operations. That increases the tension in terms of really resolving this as a problem. We're going to see probably, people have been saying this in the security community for the last couple of years, probably seeing ransomware locking down systems, not data,
mm-hmm.
But locking down, for instance, control systems that control critical infrastructure and that whereby you can't even continue operations or function.
Because hospitals, for yeah. example, depend
Huge.
So much on their systems. I mean, everyone's walking around with a computer now.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not just data that they're going to be preventing you from getting. They're going to be preventing you from using equipment that you need to use.
Yeah, and so it's almost like someone hacks like Campus Park and takes over all the parking garages on campus
and gives them back to the people.
We'll get
Sorry,
work on
Kim,
that.
That's
we'll
an inside joke. Here at OSU,
one thing on ransomware I think is interesting is I think it's probably happening a lot more often than we think, and we don't hear about it because
right.
I think a lot of people who are getting attacked, they're not exactly letting people. They're not sending out a press release. Well, we were just hacked yesterday, and
yeah.
so this, you know, it's probably happening a lot more wide scale than we realize.
Yeah,
that's what I figured. It must be happening because it only pops up with big stories.
Right.
Kim, you also wanted to discuss the shadow brokers leak and the arrest of an NSA contractor.
Yeah, I mean, this is still a big mystery, and we had even though he was arrested in August.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he was arrested, we had another announcement actually just last week from this mysterious shadow brokers group. So just a quick explanation
yeah.
of what shadow brokers is. We had someone went online, a mystery person identifying themselves as shadow broker, leaking what are NSA spy tools. And they are spy tools that are part of a group that was exposed by Russian security researchers about a year ago or a little more, a tool set called Equation Group. pretty powerful set of tools for spying on systems, getting control of them. And Shadow Broker, whoever this person is, somehow got hold of a repository of these equation group spy tools that are used by the NSA and was making them available to the highest bidder. The amount that he or she was asking for was really exorbitant in bitcoins, and that that auction never really went through. But just this week now, we see that the shadow broker is sort of breaking up individual tools and offering them individually.
Wow.
So it's unclear now. So there was an arrest of an NSA contractor. Ironically, he worked for Booz Allen in the same way that Edward Snowden did.
Mm-hmm.
He had all of these classified documents stuffed in his car at home. He'd been taking them over more than a decade, a period of time of taking them out of the office. And according to stories, some of those NSA tools were among the data that he took, but it's unclear whether or not he is actually the shadow broker, if he already leaked them to someone else and this other person is the shadow broker that's releasing them, or if somehow there's also a scenario, possible scenario, that maybe this is Russia, that Russia somehow got into this repository of NSA tools and is leaking them as a warning to the U.S. about its election hacking charges, that basically saying to
wow.
the U.S., if you want to continue pursuing this, we've got stuff of our own that we're going to be leaking.
The plot thickens. Kim Zetter, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
Happy New Year.
Also to you.
That's Kim Zetter, tech journalist for Wired, Washington Post, and The Intercept. Coming up, Russell Holley, contributing editor at AndroidCentral.com, joins us for two segments to talk about 2016, the year in review of tech. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Tech Tuesday on All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. People staring at their phones is a common sight, but the practice reached a new height this summer or this year with the release of the augmented reality game Pokemon Go. That's one of the many top stories in tech in 2016. Still with us is Dan Rockwell, CEO of Big Kitty Labs, a digital technology development firm in Columbus. And joining us by phone now, contributing editor for AndroidCentral.com, Russell Holley. Welcome back, Russell.
Thank you.
So Pokemon Go had people walking all over the place looking to find and collect digital pets. Russell, I know it's still a big hit with you. What made it such a big deal?
Well, I mean, it was two things. One is, you know, the game itself, you know, the game mechanics had already been proven to be, you know, kind of a popular concept through Niantic's first game, which was Ingress. But two, you know, the Pokemon company has learned, you know, in particular over this year where they're celebrating their 20th anniversary, that you really can put the Pokemon logo on just about anything and sell a bunch of it.
That's true. I mean, people are trading cards again.
That's true.
Dan Rockwell, what did you think about it?
I thought it was it got people outside, so it was like an exercise regimen to go and try to find these things in the yard. So I thought that was good. But I think it was a little sad when I went to the beach and everyone on the boardwalk was trying to find things. And I was like, come on, guys, we're like here at the ocean. Like, look at the stare, the awe of the ocean. They're like, no, I've got to find this thing. It's under the dock.
But, you know, it got some people out of the house that, you know, reportedly had been down in their basement for several years.
Yeah, that's right.
So playing games on a monitor. So.
Absolutely. And it was huge. I had a huge spike in traffic. It did gangbusters. And, of course, I think it's probably – now, Russell, are you still playing? That's the question.
I am. But really and truthfully now it's just because my kids are still very much into it.
Yeah.
Cool.
You know, this is it's kind of a morning routine before we go to school. And you know, when I pick them up from school, it's kind of part of our daily routine.
That's cool.
And they still get a kick out of it. So it's fun. We're definitely not as active as we were over the summer.
But Russell, what does it tell us about the potential for augmented reality? It's something you and I started talking about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, augmented reality has been around for a really long time. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not a new concept, and we're not seeing anything particularly new in how it's being used through Pokemon Go. So this I feel like is a whole lot less about Augmented reality as a technology, and more about, kind of weaving that technology into other things, which is a great deal more about, what we're seeing through projects like Google's Tango software and things like that. It's less about making it kind of a standalone technology be successful and more about making it a part of your daily life. Can be interesting.
And what better way than to couple it with this super familiar game icon?
Yeah, Nintendo, Pokemon,
kind of a thing, right? Virtual reality, this is a big year for consumer virtual reality systems. Russell, give us a quick rundown on what's out there and the strides VR made this year.
Absolutely. So this was kind of the big year for, this generation of consumer virtual reality. And through it, we saw HTC's Vive headset, which was a partnership with Steam, the popular PC gaming platform. We saw Oculus Rift, which was the biggest Kickstarter project that had ever been seen when it had first taken off for a virtual reality project. And then we saw Sony release their version to millions of PlayStation 4 consoles in the form of PlayStation VR.
Mm-hmm. And then Google VR, just cardboard, is really kind of taken off, too. We see a lot more commercials on that.
Google's cardboard is great as kind of an inexpensive way to take your phone and kind of get a glimpse into VR, and that has evolved recently into to Google Daydream. And then Samsung has their own platform that they've had for several years now called the Gear VR, which is a partnership with Oculus as well.
You know, when I used Google Cardboard only because New York Times sent me a free one, right?
Yeah, yep.
And can I use that for more things? Can I keep using that?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, anything in, you have an Android phone, so anything in the Google Play Store that says that it works with Google Cardboard will all work exactly the same way inside that New York Times headset.
What if I don't have an Android phone anymore?
Gonna have to break the news to you, Russell. She bought an iPhone.
That's awesome. There are plenty of iPhone apps that in the Apple Store that do cardboard as well. Not quite as many, but there's still a bunch.
Okay. And then as far as virtual reality, is it more than just games, Dan Rockwell?
I think so. At the Oculus event this year or whatnot, there was a big push from Zuckerberg to really push for content. They want content. They want to help fund as much content as possible. So educational content, there's a lot of venture capital coming from Facebook, coming from Oculus to say, please, we need more developers. We need more people to make content. So I think it's going to expand definitely beyond gaming. You're probably going to see a lot of it more in medical. You're going to see a lot more of it in educational. But everyone's kind of looking for where that superconductor is going to be, where a bunch of developers jump on that thread and develop around it. I think games kind of help initially because they show us all the different sort of like use modes. The other day I was with some friends. We did archery in the basement. We're like shooting arrows. Okay, that was cool. And then we're using tilt brush. And we're painting. So you're trying to figure out all these different kind of modes of using it. But I think that it will get into the space around educational medical. But that's also where AR might actually have a stronger role. Augmented reality.
Augmented reality.
So, because you're actually going to be blending things, looking at the patient, seeing information, hovering in space around them, like the HoloLens does.
Yeah.
Or the Meta 2, which is a product coming out as well. So,
you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our year-end Tech Tuesday program. We're looking back at the year of 2016 in tech news. I mean, when Russell Holley says, oh, that's been around a long time, he's talking about, 3 or 4 days in tech news. with us by phone is Russell Holley, contributing editor at AndroidCentral.com. And here with me, Dan Rockwell, CEO of Big Kitty Labs, a digital technology development firm in Columbus. You have your own ideas about what the big tech stories are in 2016. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Louisa in Cleveland, you're on the air. Hi, Louisa.
And I'm just taking off a speakerphone right now. Good day. I'm trying to get my thoughts together. I'm still a little dumbfounded by everything that happened this past year, mainly I guess as far as technology goes, I would like to, not be Chicken Little, because it is a reality that people buy into the misinformation that is put out there. And that was a big benefit to many people, where they put out this lie or mistruth, and it becomes this fireball that's got to be extinguished by those that it is portrayed. And a lot of people don't take that time before they repost it or pass it along or just take it as fact.
So you're talking about fake news.
Yeah.
I'm talking about misinformation, fake news. And just the horrible effect that it has when people don't check the source. Mm-hmm. My dad always had me reading growing up, and he'd let me read everything, but he would always say, check the source, who wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it did, it was a very, it got used by politicians. And it's a backdoor way of running a campaign now, I think, that is untruthful and sort of a sleight of hand.
It's another one of these ironies associated with technology, though. We were talking earlier how... Mm-hmm. Gosh, email was supposed to replace the telephone call, and now we're worried about having our emails hacked. Wow, the internet, access to all this information, not only does it silo what we look at, but it doesn't necessarily vet it very well for us. Dan Rockwell, I mean.
So I think it's a convergence of trends. So since the dawn of sort of YouTube, we've kind of spawned a whole generation of makers, right? So we have a lot more people creating content, a lot more people authoring content, a lot more people having a voice. And then you kind of merge that with the trends going on in technology. So technology makes it easier for you to actually get your opinions or your pieces out there. But then it sort of sets up this whole appetite where we actually want and crave more. We're not just satisfied anymore with just Fox or just CNN telling us how it works. So we want to find more outlets for that. But that allows the people that want to basically misuse or sort of create the misinformation, it creates a super highway for them to basically put that, and it's all enabled by technology. And what's scary is now it's going to be enabled by AI. So you'll be able to put a couple topics into an AI or a bot or system. It's going to automatically generate this information. It's automatically going to make it sort of harder and harder for people to distinguish if it's news or not. And then, it jumps up on Facebook, and then overnight, it's like, bam.
Just taking that super highway analogy, Russell Holley, I mean, who knew when they built the expressways that they would become these major arteries of drug dealing across the country? Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the big things that when you create a system of any kind, the software and expose a bunch of people to it is kind of, monitoring how it's used and tweak is necessary. And unfortunately, we have massive, systems now, like, through social networks that it's really hard to kind of blur that line between, this is something that isn't all that different from what you would find, in a tablet in a grocery store versus this is a flat out lie. And then how to handle that, it's a curious problem.
Going back to what Louisa said about her dad would say, go check the source. I asked my dad how to spell the word, he'd say, go look it up. And you had to actually go pick up a dictionary and look it up. This was the very olden days. I'm aware you guys probably don't remember this, but, I when I look up a word on the internet and I get a definition, how do I even know the definition's accurate anymore, right?
Right now, that's true.
You don't. I mean, the most basic information whoever they is, the evil they out there. Louisa, thanks a lot for that call. We appreciate it. Here's something, speaking of the superhighway, automation.
Yeah.
Self-driving semi-truck recently made a test run on the roads of Central Ohio, I should say. That's just one example of the strides that took this year. Dan, you wanted to talk about the progress of automation.
Yeah.
What's your impression of how this technology is developing
Well,
now?
So I think the technology is definitely, it's on pace for, I think a lot of people think it's going to be 5 or 6 years. It's probably, to me, it's going to be a little bit longer because the problem is not technology so much, it's going to be psychology. It's getting people used to this notion of letting go control. And then really how does automation really change how everything else works in the city, right? There's a lot of things that are based on our routine of driving. Parking's going to change. Fast food eating is going to change, right? All these things that were sort of geared around you being in a car and you're doing something or paying attention is now changing. So when that lane type starts to really change, I think there's going to be a lot of things that change. For example, on the trucking thing, you know, there was this notion that automated trucking could actually blow away a lot of jobs, right? What happens to every truck stop in America when, you know, the trucks are now autonomous? They can go and they can refuel themselves. What kind of per capita sort of impact does every truck stop in America have or get? Because now
to,
you've
to
automated.
To be able to stay right. In
so,
business, right?
Right. So now, you know, I think there's new – you have to sort of rethink how you did a lot of things in the past with the automation and how that's going to change and ripple. There's going to be opportunities on both sides. I think for as many jobs you think you may erase, you're actually going to create new jobs on another, you know, another side of it. But they're probably going to be more technology jobs and not, you know, necessarily the blue collar job of actually driving the truck or whatnot. And of course, you've seen that with Uber, right? You've seen how Uber, you know, it's not automation, but it's another step of concierge sort of technology.
And and isn't it Uber or is it Lyft right. that has right. self-driving cars now?
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah. And you see a lot of Midwest cities really taking on the automation, right? So Columbus is one. Pittsburgh has got a big trial going on. And I think the technology, too, it's interesting is there's a lot of policy and lawmakers getting involved because now, you know, the car is going to have an algorithm to choose who gets hurt in the trolley problem. The trolley problem is the car can, you know, if it swerves left, it hits one person. If it swerves right, it actually hits five. And now as a human, it's just an accident. But for a computer, it's going to make a tactical choice of what to do. And so because of that, now there's like another layer of sort of legal compliance involved. This is a moral algorithm conference Hesdaye did mm-hmm. last year, which was a fascinating conference where it really discussed that because everything's going to be programmed inside the car now. The car is going to be smart enough to see what's going on and talk about what's going on. So I think the technology is on pace to totally change how we do things, but the future problems are going to be more on psychology and are going to be less on actual technology.
Hmm. The same old problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. We will continue our conversation, 2016 Tech Year in Review. If you have a question or comment, if you have an idea about what you think is a top tech story, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org, and hopefully it won't get hacked. Or you can go on Facebook and post your comment or your question there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Tech Tuesday on All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. That music is the theme from HBO's hit series Westworld. The show takes place at a Western theme park where humans interact with incredibly lifelike robots powered by artificial intelligence. The robots are played by humans. And spoiler alert, things start to go bad as the robots begin to reach higher levels of consciousness. We're discussing the year in tech this hour. Still with us, Dan Rockwell, CEO of Big Kitty Labs, a digital technology development firm here in Columbus. And also, by phone, contributing editor for AndroidCentral.com, Russell Holly. Dan, you wanted to talk about Westworld. I'm on episode 5, so... No spoilers.
No spoilers.
But what's your take on the show? I mean, obviously like it.
Yeah, I think it was a masterful show. A great first season. Another, you know, right up there for HBO. I think, to me, it really paints an interesting future of, like, where things like Amazon Echo kind of go. It's fun to look at parallels of where you think technology. How did the host, you know, how did the Westworld world get to where it's at? I think it's a fascinating show because we're kind of on this dawn of an age of an audio interface, right? We can do that now with the Amazon Echo in our houses. And, of course, Google has the technology as well. But in Westworld, the whole, you know, the command interface, being able to talk to these, you know, these hosts, these robots, and walk them through a flow of what they're doing, and it's all audio. And then it actually makes you wonder as you watch the show, what else are they doing with audio that's controlling the rest of things? Mm-hmm. It's really kind of fascinating. Of course, there's a lot of great other technology kind of in Westworld, like the phone that sort of unfolds and it's like a tablet, right? And if you look at some of the UIs,
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, people in design, we kind of like look at interfaces.
There's a lot of futurism going on there.
Yeah, tons of imagining. Futurism.
Russell Holly, have you seen Westworld?
I have, yeah, and I've seen all of it, and I'm going to try really hard not to spoil it, but I can't remember what happens in episode 5. So
yeah, but what do you think?
I agree a lot about the, you know, the way that they're implementing technology is very interesting, in particular the kind of fold-out tablet, which you're only going to notice if you're paying super close attention to what each one of the technicians is doing in the background in the first couple episodes. Yeah. It becomes a little more obvious later on. But in the first couple episodes, like, you know, people, like you said, people like us are going to look at that and go, oh, that's really cool. I want one.
Which is, I mean, you know, it's right. interesting. That's the way a lot of technology is unrolled out is yeah. kind of fictionally.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the other thing, too, that you kind of you start to pick up on the show is that. You know, they burden all these robots with emotions, you know, so they're programming emotions in. And then even when you see the robots actually, you know, use computers, I thought it was kind of funny that, you know, they have this super advanced computer robot and it has to use its hand to do something on a computer. And you think, well, this thing should just have instant, you know, near field communication and talk to the computer, you know, or even
or
like your R2-D2 could just jack into the Death Star and be fine. But here, this robot's going to use its hand. And, you know, I just think there's a lot of interesting from a user experience standpoint and from sort of a product design standpoint, a lot of really cool things in Westworld to really kind of watch. And of course, it just makes you think about, you know, entertainment and in some ways, as we're wildly creative as humans, as a race, and we are going to create that. We're going to create these things. That's what's crazy about sci-fi when you watch it. It's really foreshadowing for what is going to happen. So,
and it kind of starts, Russell, do you agree with the kind of our interaction with things like Amazon Echo or the Google facsimile of that, where we just find ourselves talking and asking questions in more of a conversational way?
Oh, without a doubt. And we're already seeing, you know, kind of the theme park aspect of some of this. If you go to, you know, places like, you know, Disney, where there are entire sections of the park that are built for kids to kind of explore and, you know, that you can walk around with a Harry Potter wand, and there are parts in the park where you wave your wand in front of, you know, everyday objects, and they move specifically because you're interacting with them. There are voice games in those parks, you know, where you're given kind of a communicator, and each part of the park has, you know, different puzzles that are all kind of voice activated. So we're already kind of seeing small parts of this, you know, come to life outside of, you know, the home.
Yeah.
You know, that movie, was it pronounced Machina or Machina?
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, yeah. Right. That was an example of an incredibly lifelike AI robot. Yep. That, you know, it seemed like you kind of got along with them, but apparently you don't.
Right.
In the end, it's the intelligence transcends, and
and then
that's usually what you see, though, is sort of
everything's dark.
Everything goes wrong.
Right. Everything goes wrong.
And I'm only up to second.
So far, my Alexa hasn't killed me at home yet. Like, I come home, Amazon's trying really hard not to hurt me every day.
It's just trying to sell you things, though.
Well, true. That part is too dangerous. I remember showing it to a friend the other day, and I was like, yeah, it's great for all these things. Like, you can order stuff. Like, hey, I wanted to order some pineapple juice. And I was like, yeah, no problem. Like, done. I was like, oh, that was a demo. I like, didn't mean this. Like, I had, like, a case arrive, like, a week later. Like, bam. Like,
yep.
All right, so.
All right, so Amazon Echo, you know, Russell, we've been talking about this for a long time, too. You know, getting this start, they're kind of working, you know, weaseling into our lifestyle with things like Amazon Echo and the digital assistant Alexa and other things. It made a lot of top tech gifts this list this year, Russell. What has Amazon done right?
Well, the biggest thing they've done right is open it up so that, you know, really anybody can build an idea for, to attach onto the Alexa service. There are some really silly things that are on there that aren't, you know, for productivity sake at all. You can summon a Shakespearean bard to deliver insults. you know, there's just that so you can have, you know, random die rolls if you're a, you know, a tabletop, you know, gaming kind of person. There's a lot of just kind of random weirdness that goes into to building these kind of things, and that happens with every ecosystem like this. You look at, you know, the origin of Google's Play Store. You know, when the Android App Store had just opened up, you know, some of the Some of the most popular apps when there were only 30 apps was the one that made fart noises. You know, and the same goes for the iPhone. You know, there's a lot of weirdness that goes into those platforms when you open it up to everything. But on top of that, you start to have, you know, ideas for things that are really great. And we're seeing that with home automation and, you know, kind of shopping reminders. There's a weird Christmas contest right now on Amazon. Echo, I saw it last night. It crept through my Facebook feed, where there are random points throughout the day where if you happen to be near your Amazon Echo and you can say, you know, whatever phrase you see that shows up on your Facebook feed, then you're entered by Amazon into you know, random giveaways for gift cards and all kinds of stuff right now.
Wow.
And whoever really figured out that contest gets a bonus.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. If I mention Ann Fisher's name three times next to the Echo, like something happens.
They'll say who. That's what will happen. Let's see. Kelly in Newark, you're on the air. Hi, Kelly.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking the call.
Hey, Kelly, could I ask you real quick to pull the phone away from your mouth?
Yeah. One is the growing dependence we have, even to the point of addiction, on modern digital technology. And that goes back throughout history. I think you start out with a technology that seems to be improving our lifestyle, and someone gets control of it, and they make us all feel like we can't live without it. And the next thing you know, you're giving more and more power away.
Uh-huh.
The second has to do with the question of intelligence. Human beings created the concept. Then, very interestingly, we put ourselves at the top of the heap when it came to what was intelligent. I'm curious if we couldn't change that and think of intelligence as being that characteristic that contributes the most to the health of the planet and the people and animals that live on it. And that by that standard we define intelligence, that would put trees at the top and humans at the bottom. I'm interested in your comments.
It's a really interesting concept.
It immediately made me think
of The Matrix, you know, and where artificial intelligence could take over just because it's more morally or it perceives itself as more morally.
Again, back to Westworld. I mean, you're embedding emotions in robots, but yet you're also going to make these robots vastly superior. So, I think every day as technology progresses further, we kind of have this give and take with the technology in terms of how much more control we give it and how much perceived control we think we're going to get out of it. And obviously, we're seeing that doesn't always work out, right? We're seeing ransomware. We're seeing all these things, right? You know, we made these
tools. The ironies of technology.
Yeah, the irony of technology is that it's ridiculously faster than us. And we kind of tee up technology, and it actually doesn't always work out in our favor. And I think it's important to realize that technology doesn't really care about good or evil. It just it cares about its propagation, its use, period. So it's only through the human lens are we looking at things and saying this is good or evil. Technology is hard. Bam, it's just what it is. I think how we perceive it and how people can misuse it is really the game that we're playing.
I think his first question was really interesting too, kind of on the topic of addiction. And it's something that's kind of always in the back of my mind, given that, you know, my house is full of toys and I have three little kids that always want to play with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember back, you know, to my childhood where, you know, staying in my room and reading a book was, you know, antisocial. And it was something that, you know, I shouldn't want to do at every moment of every day. I should want to go and, you know, be outside and do other things with other people. And a lot of that same, you know, kind of parenting, I think, is going to be really important. You know, there's a huge difference between, you know, having educational software on, you know, along with games on a tablet that you give your kid versus, you know, having YouTube and the Nickelodeon app act as you know, kind of a chaperone for you while you're doing something. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is going to come down, you know, for any kind of technology is going to come down to, you know, kind of education and monitoring.
Yeah, and I think it's funny too is that some of the technology is actually like millennials really love experiences, right? So like some of the bigger things you can do nowadays is you can get an app that just gets people together at a park. So you're like, we could have done that before, but now we can schedule it and make it easier because, you know, and so there is this kind of like, I do think there is like a technology allowance, like how much do you want to swim with the technology and how much do you actually want to get away from it and do something else? I think that is kind of happening more, but we're still going to use technology to assist in that escape.
In achieving that escape.
Right.
Right, because we must have our technology.
Right.
A down note for 2016, Galaxy Note 7. I just did a lot of traveling earlier this month, and you know, it's everywhere. Not. I mean, they're telling you everywhere, don't have one. We will take it. It was one of the biggest tech fails, not just 2016, but of my gosh. And now it's hurting Samsung. I mean, it's collectively hurting the company. Russell, what went wrong?
Well, so there was a ton of research that went into it from third parties, and we still haven't gotten a ton of information from Samsung yet. But the best guess that we have so far is that in a fraction of the Note 7s that were sold, the battery casing was just a little too close to one of the parts inside of the phone as a result of trying to make everything kind of thinner and lighter, and so there were select opportunities for that battery to become ruptured, which would cause the fire that was experienced by so many. It wasn't a result of plugging it into the wrong charger, like a lot of people had initially thought. It wasn't a bad battery batch like Samsung had initially thought. This was a function of the design that was just a little too thin in this one specific area.
Any update on how many people have turned theirs in, or whether or not they're still not responding to calls to turn theirs in?
A tremendous amount of people have turned them in, but there are still a bunch of them that have decided to keep them and continue using them. But that isn't going to be an option for almost all of them as of, I think, January 5th, where Verizon Wireless and T-Mobile and AT&T and Sprint are all going to release software updates. That are going to be kind of forced software updates that are going to, just kind of appear on the phone if they are attached to the network. And it's going to remove the ability to make phone calls and access the internet and do things like that. So the phone, by and large, will be officially dead as of the beginning of next year. There was a lot of push to kind of have it happen before that. Mm-hmm. But Verizon had pushed back saying that, crippling someone's phone during the holidays was a particularly bad idea, especially... So they were going to wait until January 5th. Personally, I think having your phone explode during the holidays is a particularly bad idea.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But I am not Verizon, so.
Okay, so Dan Rockwell, any we have just a couple minutes left, but anything dangling out there you wanted to talk about?
Dangling out there in the world of technology. I think we all have to think about what technology gifts you got this Christmas. What kind of Christmas gifts do you want, Anne, for their technology based?
I don't know.
You have a new iPhone?
Now I think I want a smartwatch.
You want a smartwatch?
But that's just because why not? I don't have any deep need.
My wife wants a karaoke machine. I don't know why.
That's a thing this year, is karaoke
machines.
It is
a big
machines.
Thing. So I got to get a karaoke machine. I don't know. I think wearables are going to be interesting, but I think 2017 is going to be a big year for more audio types, so more audio interface type technology, and then of course it's just going to be tons of news on Tesla and all this automation stuff. So it's going to be a cool year.
How about you, Russell Holly?
I'm going to be a little selfish here and say that virtual reality is going to be a big thing just because that's what I really enjoy right now.
Nice.
I think it's going to keep being a fun focus as we move more specifically towards, feeling more like you are actually physically standing in, those virtual environments, where you can look down and see your hands and see your feet and have them actually move along as you move them.
Yeah, I'm going to take the AR because I want to have the Harry Potter wand and be able to change things in my house. Like open the fridge, Expectus Patronus, get me Beerus. No, I don't know. My wife would love that too. So,
well, I just would like to go back to the Harry Potter ride at Universal Studios and blast through that thing. It's supposed to be getting even better. Well, Dan Rockwell, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Yep.
Dan Rockwell, CEO of Big Kitty Labs. That's a digital technology development firm here in Columbus. And Russell Holly, have a very happy holiday. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us as always.
Happy holidays,
it's
folks.
It's been a pleasure. Happy holidays.
Russell Holly, contributing editor for AndroidCentral.com. That's it for Tech Tuesday for 2016. Thanks for joining us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.